Ingram Smith with the Instant Reaction Podcast. A victorious version with Florida State beating the Gators 38-22. So never a game that will be submitted to the most spectacular representations of the sport, but a good way for Florida State to end the year. Certainly as good of an ending as possible. So five straight over Florida. Don't want to downplay that. Don't want to downplay Jimbo Fisher's overall record against in-state rivals and his record against Miami and the University of Florida. An odd atmosphere and kind of setting that surrounded this game. At times, this game to me felt like a really good rivalry game with some aggression and anger and resentment and all the things that make up a rivalry. And at times, this game felt like just two really crappy teams playing with each other and two offenses that were just embarrassingly inept. So don't want to diminish the victory. Certainly want to, if that was Charles Kelly's last meaningful performance as a defense coordinator, there were some really nice elements there, and his team is accountable as any unit for what happened. So the defense played at a really high level, which probably doesn't come as all too big of a surprise considering who they were going up against. But Burns obviously makes the play in the first quarter that lets you score your first touchdown. Levante Taylor has a career day with two interceptions, one of which he takes to the house. And if Matthew Thomas does not have the most Matthew Thomas-esque and emblematic kind of representation of his entire career, with an interception that he takes down to about the half-yard line, is later assessed a personal foul, not for falling or flipping into the end zone, which you'll occasionally see people get a personal foul for, but for some type of unsportsmanlike conduct that either something he said or an action he did in the middle of the end zone. It's not exactly clear on TV what happened, but something long after the act of scoring caused for a 15-yard penalty to be assessed, and I don't normally spend that long talking about penalties, but it was only important because Matthew Thomas had not scored the touchdown that he thought he had in his mind and yet had gone down at the half-yard line, so Florida State did not have the pick six that it thought it did, and rather found itself with a first down and the ball at the 16-yard line. Nonetheless, Florida State would go on to score on that drive. So, not to be long-winded about one play in particular, but like I mentioned, at times this was a nice game to look at. At times this was just incredibly inept as far as what Florida State's offense was able to do and what Florida's offense, what both teams were able to do when they had the ball. Florida State, it's just, if you had any reservations or concerns about what you're doing at offensive line, I would think only coming into this game highlights that even more. Just a unit of play that was not able to establish any type of push against a defensive line or a front seven that had been giving up ridiculous amounts of rushing yards throughout the season. Now, Florida has some talent there and has two kids in particular that are an absolute handful to block, but still not the performance that you thought you'd get. A really nice day out of Jacques Patrick, and don't want to minimize the offensive line's contribution there, but for the most part, that was a really frustrating day. They got better in the second half. I don't want to not note that, but still, 10 or 11 tackles for loss surrendered. It's just a unit that allows the defensive line to play on the other side of the line of scrimmage far too frequently. So, a situation to monitor, and we'll have to look and watch as to if that is a place where you might see some turnover in the next month or two. Florida State's defense, as I mentioned earlier, in highlighting some of the turnovers and plays that they contributed to scoring points, just a really good, consistent day from the guys who I thought had played at a really high level throughout the course of the year. Derek Naughty, man, that guy just had a great day and flew under the radar, but had a really, really good senior season. So happy for him. Hope he's able to put himself in a great place to be drafted. He might get a little bit of a knock on his draft grade just because of his physical dimensions, but he put together an incredible, incredible year of tape, and I hope that he is justly rewarded for that. Josh Sweat continued having a really good year with another solid day, a guy that's able to play the run at a much higher level than I would have ever anticipated coming down to college, and got credited with either a sack or a sack and a half today as well. And Brian Burns. Brian Burns has just been a different player since the Clemson game. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know if he was nursing an injury. I'm not sure if he just feels more comfortable with what he's being asked to do, but Burns has been much more the athletic defensive playmaker in these last three or four games than he was the beginning of the year, certainly. Almost had a first half of the year that you could almost entirely write off. He's been pretty much everything that you could have hoped for since then. So credit to 99 continues to turn his level of play up a good bit as the season progresses. Matthew Thomas not only had the one play that everybody's going to talk about, he also had a couple other plays that just stood out to me. And Matthew Thomas, man, the unicorn is is often a source of frustration, and also often a guy that just jumps out at you as one of the most athletically gifted kids on the field. There's a play in the first quarter where, like, either it's a bad snap or something where Franks just has to improvise and then tries to take off running. And the rate at which Matthew Thomas runs that kid down versus the rate at which every other Florida State defensive player moves is really something to watch. I mean, he's just able, if Matthew Thomas is able to look at a play, diagnose that, okay, I'm going to meet you at this spot, and I can run in a straight line to get there, damn, that is a hell of a ball player. And he also makes a lot of mistakes, and not just referring to the play where he goes down at the half-yard line, obviously. But when Matthew Thomas gets to chase and Matthew Thomas gets to play in space, he can put together a really good highlight tape and somebody that will, at the very least, has the ability to get, I predict he has the ability to make an NFL roster, or at least have the opportunity to make an NFL roster, because he can do things. He can put together like a one-play tape, and by that I mean that you can show a player personnel or an executive one play of Matthew Thomas, two plays of Matthew Thomas, and you can close the book on it and go, yeah, that guy's got enough physical ability that absolutely want to take a gamble on that. Thought that the young players in Florida State secondary continue to emerge. Sanford Samuels had a handful today, getting matched up against Florida's best wide receiver, number four. But on the whole, had a pretty solid day. Always has a lot of effort. Seems to play with the type of attitude that you think might be necessary for a defensive back to have. Cyrus Fagan continues to emerge, continues to get more snaps. I think that's a really good sign. So Florida State is 5-6. It's a year that will not be forgotten. It's a year that has had its really trying and challenging moments. And I will just plead, I guess it's just as a Florida State fan, I have a lot of reasons to say this, but today only served to remind me that I really hope we don't ever suck this bad anytime soon. And I know that's a profound statement with a lot of detailed analysis given, but another 12 o'clock game, another game with, I mean, they weren't horrible, but the people that get assigned to these games, you can tell they're not exactly the A-team. And if you're going to criticize units or groups for not being the A-team, whatever the hell combination of people that got assigned to referee this game, man, I don't think we've questioned officiating at all this year, something I'm proud of, and I don't mean just on the instant. I mean throughout the entirety of the NOLCast. But that was just flat garbage, what the officiating crew offered up today. Everything from just ridiculous spots of the ball. There's a there's one play in particular that, honestly, if we're not going to call the hit that Cam Akers takes by 33, if we're not going to call that targeting, we need to get rid of this rule. That is, I can't think of a more, I can't, if you were to ask me to go into like a software program and create a situation where I tried to draw up a situation that I thought that rule is supposed to guard against, that's pretty much what it would look like. I think that's what I would come up with. And that's not even reviewed? I'm not sure. Well, I'm kind of having two different conversations here. One, I'm being critical of the individual set of officials who were assigned this game and were horrible for both teams. And then I'm being hypercritical of targeting in general, because it doesn't seem that the most blatant examples of it get called for whatever reason. And maybe that's just personal bias, or I'm having too much of a recency bias with this game, but there does seem to be some pretty egregious examples that don't get looked at. And then we love to go and review stupid plays that did not look like there was an ounce of intent to have contact with a head or any type of malicious contact. And we look at them and we slow them down and we run it back 9 times and we conclude that a kid's head got tapped and kick a player out of a game. This is just a dumb rule that they need to completely go back to the drawing board, because it's not being officiated correctly. The most obvious situations seem to be ignored, and those that seem to have a need for discretion or a need for judgment, far too often, in my opinion anyways, we end up kicking out kids of games that had no intent to target the head and had no intent to do any kind of have a non-natural football play, if that vernacular makes any sense. So, you got Louisiana Monroe next week. You have a chance to go 6-6. You have a chance to go to a bowl game. You have a chance to avoid a losing season. And if that, at this point of the season, is what you're resigned to, which is what the case is for Florida State, it's pretty indicative of the year you've had. But you have to give credit, even an ounce of it, to the coaching staff. This has been one really hard year for everybody involved, and a lot of people could have mailed it in. Most people didn't, and at least there's nothing in this season that can be saved or changed, or that happened, hell, at this point, months ago. But at the very least, you kept it together enough to put yourself in a place to still be able to go to a bowl and not suffer a losing season, which hasn't happened around here in 4 decades. So, look forward to looking at a Louisiana Monroe game. I'm not completely, that's not me being like sardonic or entirely dismissive. I think that may be a slightly better game than people first think, depending on the focus and motivation, and also maybe some things that are happening externally to the team. So, curious to see how this week sets up and if Florida State can, in fact, go and get that game. Certainly expect them to get a victory, and look and see where their record is after 12 games. So, just want to thank our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce, For the Table Restaurant Group. Both of them have been with us for some period of time, and want to thank you, the listener. Our analytics have never been so strong. We recently passed 8,000 five-star reviews. I think we targeted that for Christmas. We ended up getting there before Thanksgiving. That's incredible. Very much appreciated, y'all. Have had quite the season here to talk about, and I think we've gotten most things right, probably gotten some wrong along the way as well, but appreciate you being with us, and look forward to seeing what the future holds. This program is never going to be short on conversation, and I get a feeling that the next couple of weeks will be a lot of fun to watch how this all plays out, and look forward to being there with you. So Bud and I will resume on Monday for our traditional look back pod, and very much look forward to talking to you then.